higher performance and faster and more reliable.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Open Paddock Podcast episode number 220 for Tuesday, February 25th, 2013. Tonight in IndyCar, John Barnes will not go quietly into the night. JV's back after nearly 20 years. The Mazda Road to Indy is celebrating Winterfest. We're going to have the boys back in the booth for the 100 Acre Wood Rally review. And then finally in Formula One, we'll be talking about Bernie Ecclestone, not a reliable or truthful witness testing so far. And welcome everybody to the show after that intro that I had to struggle to get through because of the giggles, thanks to the co-host tonight, Mike Weitzel. Hello, Mike. Welcome back.
Good evening, everyone.
You, sir, you are never allowed to hang out with Doug again. he has polluted you. Or at least you were already polluted and he's just brought it back to the surface.
No, we just had a real good time this weekend at 100 Acre Wood, so that was pleasant. Too bad you weren't there.
I know.
We tried to make you feel part of it, though. I think you got sufficient amount of texts and emails and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I did. I got a lot of good stuff, so I was excited. I felt like I was there with you, and that Saturday night I actually had quite a few Italian margaritas on my date night, the one moment where I got to actually spend time with the gal pal this week, was out at the dinner. And unfortunately not at the rally as we planned, but you know what? Uncle Sam can be and often is slightly uncompromising with one's time. Joining us as well, back and alive, surprisingly, is one Doug Patterson. Hello, sir. Welcome.
Crap.
Pretty sure that's exactly what the text message said.
we had a very good time down in Salem. It was
there moonshine cherries?
No, there was rye on rye.
Yeah, the rye on rye was good. We did see moonshine cherries at the local Walmart, which shocked me.
I thought
Mike was like, "Woo!" And I'm like, "No."
Falling asleep on the rally stage because of inebriation is completely different than falling asleep behind a tire barrier and a catch fence, I will assure you. So I can fall asleep
for the rock slinging.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. All fun and games until somebody loses their manhood, as I told Mr. Weitzel in the face. Which just fits right into the splendid conversation we've been having. And also joining us, the other individual who's not at 100 Acre Wood, and probably the guy who's the most qualified to be there, Mr. Shaw, the intern. Hello, sir. Have you drove any hits to our website this week?
Unfortunately, probably not this week. It'll come later.
Your feats of strength are fleeting, my friend.
I know. I did get a nice preview out before the event.
It was a very nice preview. I enjoyed reading it.
So. Indeed. So, but we've got kind of a light show tonight. We've got quite a bit in the realm of Mazda Road to Indy, and as well the boys will be going into overdrive with the 100 Acre Wood review. Where I will admit that if this was the old Open Paddock Podium Challenge of old, I would have been bested in my prediction as I lost out on my bet, and we will get into that in just a bit. But let's go ahead, boys, and let's just start out with some miscellaneous motorsports stuff. And, well, the 12 hours of Daytona, not to be outdone by the 24 hours, the Daytona 500 was this weekend. And actually, I did forget about the drink roll call. Good call. But I didn't want to admit that I was drinking Coke. So
they make Coke. You mean cola. Never mind.
Yeah, cola. Yeah.
I didn't know they made that in liquid form.
You can do anything with a good chemistry set, Doug. And since I just got a sparkling 73%,
you move to Missouri and see what happens.
Hey, meth capital of the world, man.
It used to be Oregon.
Well,
that was the meth capital.
Boys, real quick, because I don't want to buck tradition, Mr. White, so what are you having to drink this evening?
I'm having a Fathead's Headhunter IPA. This after I dumped the Dorado India Double Pale Ale down the sink that I was drinking from Ballast Point Brewery. It's a wonderful brewery, and they make that Sculpin IPA that I just adore. But
And I was very thankful that you brought some down to Salem, because that was magnificent stuff. I liked it.
Yeah, it's good and smooth. I love it.
Interesting. Well, Mr. Patterson, what are you having on this fine evening, sir?
I am having a fine martini. Thank you very much.
Well, very good, very good. I agree. I approve. Mr. Shaw.
After manufacturing a wonderful pasta dish this evening, I'm drinking a nice Malbec wine.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Whoa.
Leave it to the intern to class the place up a bit.
I know, right? It's
more variety than we've had in a while. I
know.
Wine and cola. Cola. Yeah.
Love my cola.
C-O-L-A. Cola.
It's actually a great cola, too, because it is a McDonald's fountain soda that I am using to wash down my double cheeseburger. I mean, I knew that we were talking about the Daytona 500, so I wanted to go ahead and sponsored up. This show brought to you by McDonald's, where their double cheeseburgers are to die for, and this Coke is magnificent. Send the check to XYZ address, and maybe we can actually go to some real races. But anyways, all right. Well, that's the beverage roll call, not to buck tradition. And let's go back to the Daytona 500. We'll just consider that the rain delay of the show.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it was so terrible.
Jimmy Johnson won the rain delay.
And a surprising twist of fate, and possibly the first time ever, or at least since the first time in, what, 53 was it? The Daytona 500 had two separate winners on the same day as the rain delay. That had actually there had been some rain there in the Daytona area pretty much all day Sunday. Heavy, severe weather that brought out warnings, sirens, evacuations. So in the process of working the rain delay, the people over at NASCAR and Fox put on the 2013 Daytona 500, in which Jimmy Johnson responded before restarting the 2014 Daytona 500 at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, that in fact he had received a number of text messages because everybody thought he had won the Daytona 500 again.
Nice.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, if you are a fan of motorsport listening to this show, you know it to be true. So anyways, move ahead to the real 2014 Daytona 500. And of course, what would be the start of a racing season without Dale Earnhardt Jr., or as Darrell Waltrip continued to call him, like the whole entire last 10 minutes of the race, Junebug.
Oh, God, that's right.
I know, right? I was about to projectile vomit whatever I was eating all over the thing when he was, going into,
I just keep seeing him as young little Junebug.
Yeah, boogity boogity, I'm an idiot.
Boogity boogity.
Okay, that's getting a little bit
old.
Are
they channeling, I really haven't had my martini yet, I promise. So were they channeling the B-52s or something with the whole Junebug thing?
I don't know, but I assure you that I did watch the Daytona 500, as is a custom. I do watch the Daytona 500 because I like it. I like the big events. I'm not obviously the biggest NASCAR fan on the face of the planet, but I watched it because it's Daytona 500, just like NASCAR.
It's the only NASCAR event I will watch in the year.
Yeah. And so I'm watching it, and the whole last 10 minutes, Darrell Waltrip, who had already said about 1,000 stupid things during the show, and you could tell the look on his face, he knew that he was an idiot. He's just sitting there, as Shaw says, all I can think about is little Junebug, and brr, I'm an idiot, and boogity, 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 let's go rain delay, and shut up and retire, you dipshit. Anyways, I digress. But Dale Earnhardt Jr. won the Daytona 500. I'm a bit confused, as some pundits on ESPN had said that the racing had went pretty much clean and green after the rain delay. I'm a little confused, as there were at least three accidents involving seven cars or more. throughout the race. After,
and there was two significant ones, right? There was one with about 20 laps left, mm-hmm. right? And then there was a wreck with 7 laps left, which left them only 3 laps to go when they went green. And of course, what happens on the very last lap?
Madness.
As usual, yes. There's a wreck, you know. Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. I mean, the entire sport is geared around that, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing that I don't understand, and like I know that I'm not the sharpest sword in the arsenal when it comes to talking about like the technical aspects of the car, but the thing that really drove Dale Earnhardt to victory, if you will, was the last 3 laps he got a piece of this like really dark, super sticky tape that they used to repair all the crash damage on the pileup cars had actually attached itself to the front of his air induction system. Now, for those who are not as familiar with stock cars, because we don't typically talk about NASCAR on the show, when you qualify the stock car, you want that front grille to be covered as much as possible to give you a more aerodynamic shape.
Well, just enough, but you got to have just enough opening for the radiator to get enough cool. So you want to get that perfect amount of shutting it down, but leaving a little bit open so that way it doesn't overheat.
Yes. And so with 3 laps to go, Dale Earnhardt actually hit a piece of this tape that had come off one of the cars, and it had actually stuck perfectly to where, like you said, Mike, he had that just right amount of air going into the radiator, but he also had more speed and was shaped better than probably any other car in the field at that point because of it. And everybody was going crazy, oh my goodness, Junior's not going to win the race because there's 3 laps to go and he's got this piece of tape on the car and it's going to overheat and blow up. I was like, dude, this is like exactly, if you are Dale Earnhardt or if you are the crew chief on that car, you are thinking, oh my God, this is like a sign from the heavens that we were meant to win this race. Because what you do is you now have a advantage, albeit unintentional advantage in speed over your other contributors or your other competitors, and you only have 3 laps of racing to go. Now the only way I could have seen that being a problem is that there are multiple green white checkers. But if I'm Dale Earnhardt Jr., I'm like, oh, this is an interesting turn of events, and I'm happy about it. So at the end of the day, Dale Earnhardt Jr. wins, making him a 2-time Daytona 500 champion, essentially locking him into the chase for the NASCAR championship. But we won't talk about that because my doctor says my blood pressure will kill me. So we will stay away from that.
Because your doctor said, don't worry about things that you really don't need to spend your time worrying about.
Exactly. So 2-time Daytona 500 champion. My champion is usually whomever has done the best after the first 2 races of the year when I switch over to IndyCar and Formula One. So Earnhardt Jr., you may have just won my championship. But moving on to the sports car realm and the Tudor United Sports Car Championship after the pretty horrendous events of the Rolex 24, in which Mio Gidley and the Gainsco Chevrolet Corvette Daytona prototype suffered catastrophic damage after that accident with the Rizzi Competizione Ferrari 458. It was announced this week, actually, that Stallings, the team owner, Bob Stallings, who owns this team, Bob Stallings Racing, actually, will actually shut down the team for 2014 and really reevaluate the plans for the team going into the 2015 season. So, again, shutting down the team this year as they move forward from the accident at Daytona, which obviously is no surprise to me. And really reevaluating the state of the program. Obviously, the number 99 Red Dragon is a stalwart in the Grand Am Championship, and was a heavy favorite, I think, at the Rolex 24. It's tough news to hear such a popular car, such a good team, is shutting up the doors for the season. But obviously, after what had happened at the Rolex 24, it is completely understandable why they have chosen to go the route they have. So,
for the team, they were already planning on doing a reduced schedule this year. and, you know, having their car completely obliterated, the funding that it would take to go ahead and rebuild and get back up to speed, and the fact that they're already on a reduced schedule, pretty easy to see them making that decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was tough to hear, obviously, but, you know, again, yeah, it was an easy choice, and we'll definitely look forward to seeing them in 2015. So that being said, let's go ahead and move into the meat and potatoes of the show, and that's going to be into the IndyCar first, where tonight we're going to lead off the topic with the Leaders' Circle entries confirmed for this year, so for the 2014. And Mike, if you want to go ahead and take over.
Okay. They went ahead and announced the Leader Circle entries. Leader Circle is slightly different this year. The amount that's getting paid out is, I think, just a little bit less, but I didn't see anywhere in this article where they said what the total amount of Leader Circle money would be. It's at least $1 million for 18 races. In the past, it's been 1.3, so I'm not quite sure what the value of that will be. 20 teams were signed up, and I could go through the list, but I'll just bore you. Suffice to say, most of the usual suspects are on there. There is one notable exception of that list, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit when we get in to talk about certain events with a National Guard sponsorship. But the things that do need to be pointed out, they're restructuring a few things, so not everything's based on Leader Circle. In the past, they've also paid a bonus at each race for top the podium positions. They paid like $35,000 to the win and, you know, $15,000 to second. You know, some sort of breakdown. Where they're going to continue doing that, they're going to slightly the race winner will get $30,000, second place will get $20,000, and that will go on down to about $2,000 for 10th place.
$2,000. Hey, here you go. Go have some Big Macs.
Yeah.
Value of a Big Mac cannot be underrated.
Doug informs me through our super secret handy dandy texting window that the race bonuses before were $50,000 for a win, $30,000 for second, $20,000 for third. I thought they were a bit lower than that, but yeah, it really doesn't matter. Nah. Regardless of what we think on that, $50,000 for a race win on top of the $1.5 or $1.3 million they were getting, still that $50,000 is a super paltry sum compared to what they're doing out there. But you know, since they're doing the NFL model of running their organization, okay, I understand. So yeah, they're going to pay out to the top 10 instead of the top three at race weekends. $20,000 guaranteed to the top non-Leader Circle entry at each race. So there's some potential for the non-Leader Circle people to get a good amount of money, because they also pay out, you know, a decent sum of money along with that, you know, top finisher and what have you. The Indy purse structure, of course, is entirely different. It's going to be pretty much as normal and completely, cryptic because of all the different prize monies and prize funds and who led this lap and, you know, top finishing Chevy entry and all that kind of stuff. So the Indy purse is always kind of a moving target. But suffice to say, Pocono and Fontana also will have higher bonuses to the top finishers, to the top 10 finishers of the race, to the sum, I think, of $40,000 for the winner of the race going on down the line.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, again, the Leader Circle entries, it's all the usual suspects, and we're not really going to go into that. I mean, Sarah Fisher's on there, Schmidt-Peterson's on there, you know, all the Ganassi cars, all the Andretti cars, all the Penske cars, you know, pretty much. The only kind of interesting ones are Dale Coyne has a TBA entry on there. He's got Justin Wilson and the unidentified driver of the 18 car. Brian Herta still hasn't announced who their driver is going to be, though we think we have some idea of who that might be. But those guys are all listed on this report. But that would be all I have on the leader circle. So do we want to talk about the elephant in the room?
Yeah, may as well move on to the elephant in the room. And that is, as we've been talking about now for the last few weeks anyways, the John Barnes Panther Racing, Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan National Guard situation that has now come to a head even more so, if you will. Mike, you again, you have the wife who is the legal expert. so if you could please bring us into your realm for a brief moment.
This is not my realm, and I am just annoyed that I have to even deal with this. This is sad. My. John Barnes has decided that since the National Guard sponsorship went to Panther Racing, or went away from Panther Racing to Ray Hall Letterman Racing, that he's going to sue. He's going to sue Document and Packaging Corporation. DocuPack is the group that assigns the National Guard sponsorship. They're basically working for the National Guard to broker where that sponsorship money goes. So they're suing DocuPack, they're suing Indy Racing League, and they're suing Ray Hall Letterman. And nice. John Metzler is, and John Metzler is listed as a defendant, and I don't even know how he gets into this. Recall that one of the reasons that the sponsorship went to Ray Hall Letterman as opposed to John Barnes is that they wanted $5 million less than John Barnes per year. So I can't see too much. I can't see how this is happening, you know, as far as what grounds he has to sue them. But obviously, we don't know what all went on behind closed doors. Scanning through this article, it says that this Metzler fellow is a member of the Army National Guard Bureau and was one of the original people who helped Panther get the sponsorship in the first place, and potentially was one of the backdoor facilitators that helped the National Guard sponsorship move to Ray Hall's team.
That's exactly as I had read it as well previously to the show. So again, and now this is something that we were talking about before the show, and something that we were talking about IndyCar really leveling the banhammer down onto Panther Racing, because again, what this is doing is this is driving away those sponsors that you're hoping to bring into the sport by saying, hey, if you sign with another team and another team doesn't like it, or if they feel as though they've been wrongfully done, they're going to sue you. And that is not going to bring in the kind of sponsors that IndyCar or any of the teams are looking to bring into the series.
Mike, you had a thought?
Yeah, just just reading it, this article is talking about how, you know, as Barnes had made numerous overtures regarding improprieties he believes were made by DocuPack, the IndyCar series, and Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing. You know, the thing is what really maybe he's basically trying to get them open up the books, right? Mm-hmm. Figure out exactly what it was that they were offering that made his deal go under, and see if he could find anything in there. But by just making these wide base claims, it just requires then stuff to become public and to get dirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder a little bit about this. One of the things we heard about the complaint that he made was that supposedly he has some sort of exclusivity deal with the fan zone or whatever they want to call it at the race weekends. Not sure exactly how that works, how you would gain an exclusive contract to be the only person who could put, you know, put the National Guard in the fan zone. But contracts are contracts. I mean, if they've written a contract that's so poorly worded, like an FIA technical specification, then the Indy Racing League is going to have to answer for that. But on the other side, you know, just like Sean said, you can't, as a potential sponsor, as you know, the newest line of e-cigarettes or whatever is coming into the IndyCar series, you can't sit there and worry that, you know, when the time comes that I'm done, I don't feel like I'm getting financial I don't feel like my money's being handled responsibly at one team, or I don't feel like I'm getting enough impact for my dollars, and I decide to move to another team, there should be no fear in my mind that as long as I've served out a contract that I would be sued. So, you know, the National Guard sponsorship, as far as we're aware, and obviously, again, contracts are contracts, and we don't know what they say unless we're told, but the National Guard sponsorship supposedly was a yearly renewed thing. So I don't get it. I'm going to be interested to see where this goes. But then again, I don't want to hear any more about it. Mm-hmm. All I want to know is that the IndyCar series cancels or silences any idea that other sponsors could be sued because somebody gets sour grapes like this John Barnes fella.
Yeah.
I would really like to see IndyCar aggressively pursue John Barnes to sue him back, a countersuit claiming defamation of the series by even beginning to think that he could sue, you know, because a sponsor moved from one team to another. Hmm. But the only way IndyCar can be named as an accessory is if they did something improper or helped facilitate something improper to happen. And, you know, I'm very interested to see where this one goes.
Oh, indeed. I think a lot of people are. Doug, do you have anything to add to the John Barnes saga?
You know, I think about what happened at Milwaukee in 2011, and I think how quick the response was. And
with the Mazda Road in Indy is what you're talking about.
Right. And, you know, I look at what Barnes continues to do, and I'm like, really? There's no response here? You know, of course, you know, we do this is 3 years later. This is 3 years later. And, well, that's true. And there is a bit of a culture change. We got different leadership, so but, you know, it's still, I don't know. I won't at this point with all the shenanigans that Barnes is playing. I won't miss him on the grid.
No.
I think, and I mean, this is just a long list of things that we've been seeing from the team. Whether it's you know, whether it's somebody like their number one driver being removed out of the car, really just a real number of things that have contributed to this. And I agree with you, Doug. I don't think that I will truly miss John Barnes off the grid or his team for that matter. As I've been saying now for a while, you know, it's simply unacceptable. Just like we've seen, as you said, Doug, with the O2 situation in Milwaukee years ago, it's simply unacceptable to do this to the sport, especially when you claim to love it as much as he does, and now you're going to dig up the dirt and make a big deal about something like this. So, obviously, story to be continued, unfortunately. But again, like you said, Mike, I really hope that we see some serious penalties levied towards the Panther Racing team, as that precedent had already been established previously with some of the Mazda Road Indy guys who as well tried to bring this.
Yeah, to establish the same precedent, though, because this isn't a competition thing. He's not inciting people to leave the IndyCar series. At least from his viewpoint, he's been wronged, and it's been wronged in a way that stands legally against contracts. I mean, the IndyCar series can't do anything to him on a competition level, or they would be risking their legal position if they did anything to him on a competition level. But it looks like he didn't even apply for the Leaders Circle program.
And have we heard who's going to be driving the car this year? I mean, have they come out with a driver? So, I mean, we don't even really know where they're at.
That Huerta's kid was the one that kept getting tests. Remember that Ryan Briscoe supposedly was lined up and had a contract, but that contract dissolved after Panther was no longer able to guarantee that they were going to get the National Guard sponsorship.
Indeed. All right, well, we shall move on. Oh, go ahead.
One other thing. Recall that Dan Weldon had to sue John Barnes to get paid in the past, And as you guys have mentioned, this is just a kind of a long line of situations where John Barnes has not acquitted himself well.
No. So. No, he has not. I think we can all agree on to that. Well, in a kind of a weird situation, Jacques Villeneuve, who we talked about just recently joining the FIA World Rallycross Championship, is now going to come back and race for Schmidt-Peterson Hamilton Racing for the Indianapolis 500, adding another past champion to the mix, boys.
Well past.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to bring up. It's like, well, you know, we're doing this. Why don't we put Ari Leyendijk back in the car?
Well, I do remember that last year people were really lobbying for, was it Buddy Lazier?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
People were really lobbying for Buddy Lazier.
Buddy Lazier is not that far past.
Yeah.
Well, Buddy Lazier has been driving at the 500 off and on for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Whereas Jacques Villeneuve has been sitting on his couch for the better part of the last 20 years.
And no. He opened up a restaurant. He had a singing career. He's not been on the couch. Boys.
And Shaw, I will say, okay. Rick Mears could still drive circles around most of the people on the grid.
Ooh.
Wow.
And that's not to say anything about necessarily that talent level has gone down in IndyCar, but just Rick Mears is that good.
Well, that's true.
He's a Hall of Famer, of course.
He was actually always my favorite, so.
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was going to chime in on that with Jacques Villeneuve and just say, you know, it can't hurt to have Jacques Villeneuve come to the 500. All it can do is hurt him in that if he comes out and just doesn't acquit himself well, he just loses a notch. He just loses – he goes down a peg. Everybody sits there and says, well, this is basically what we thought of you, Jacques Villeneuve.
Mm-hmm.
Can it help IndyCar? Yeah, it might draw some eyeballs, but the other side of it is if he does well, people just basically say, hey, it's a 20-year-old washed-up, has been from Formula One and the 20 years ago in kart when he won a championship and a Indy 500. I don't know. I'll tell you, the one thing I do think about this is it makes me interested in seeing how this is going to be spun as a win for the glory days of kart. You know, well, you got Sebastian Bourdais and Juan Pablo Montoya and Jacques Villeneuve and Tagliani and Pagenaud – or not Pagenaud, but who am I thinking of? Servia.
Oh, yeah.
And, the constant litany of guys that have been in kart and you know, obviously – well, Will Power for that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys Justin Wilson. But what it does show is there's kind of a cadre of guys who have bounced around from all these different series, some with Formula One tie-ins and everything like that. High level of talent. And I just hope that bringing Jacques Villeneuve in isn't seen as a mistake by everybody involved.
Mm. Well, interesting. I caution, though, how many eyes it will bring to the race because, I mean, since leaving IndyCar, Formula One, the whole thing, I mean, he's been a relatively limited quality kind of competitor. He's shown up at NASCAR a few times. He'll be obviously doing this World Rallycross Championship for the FIA. But, I mean, at the same point in time, I mean, what has he really done? You know,
other than wreck half the grid in NASCAR when he's trying to push his way through at Montreal.
Oh, my goodness. Anyways. But okay, well, let's go ahead and move on then to Alan Bestwick, officially announced for ABC as the lead guy for the IndyCar series this year. Are we saying good? Are we saying bad? What do we think about this, boys?
I'm thinking wait and see.
When we talked about this before, you know, because this had been rumored, there are some articles that have come out about it. So we talked about it as if it were a done deal before, but this is the official announcement. What I would say is Alan Bestwick is the one guy on any of the NASCAR broadcast booths that acquits himself as something of a professional, and the rest of the people sit there and hoot and holler and yahoo. So,
yeah, it's a lot better than listen to to what we heard this last weekend.
Yeah, gosh.
And beyond that, you know, he's a guy that's going to fit in well with this ABC ESPN thing simply because they're planning on using him all over the place. I think he's going to be doing some SEC games. He's going to do some golf in addition to other sports along with IndyCar. So they're already looking on how they can use him across the network, not just for racing. And I heard some comments from him basically saying, I am an announcer. I don't want to be shoehorned as being only a motorsports guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, good on him.
Yeah. Doug, what do you think about the choice in television talent for IndyCar with bringing Mr. Bestwick into the fold?
I think I shall use the words of Sir Isaac Newton and say, I have no data, therefore I feign no hypothesis. I know nothing about this guy. I don't watch NASCAR, so you know I don't know if this is good or bad. So I'll wait and see. I have no data.
Hmm. Okay.
So, I thought you were going to say, "Ouch, my head hurts."
Well. Okay. Enough of this science. School's over now. Anyways, let's talk about the other 7,000-pound elephant, which you and I, Doug, will have a kind of point-counterpoint debate article coming out, which I'm a little upset because I feel as though I'm in a position of a disadvantage that I'm not able to issue the rebuttal, or you've already kind of seen what I've put out there, and now you get to bring it to the table.
No. This will be a fully fleshed out little back and forth is what I have in mind.
Okay. So that being said, though, we do have talk, merely talk only, of a Garage 34 entry into the IndyCar series, but the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, Didn't they start talking about this a couple of years ago? I mean, it's been around for a while, at least a year.
I think it was mainly talking about trying to bring the speeds up. I don't think it was about introducing new technology into the championship like what they want to do.
Well, this notion really got started back with the introduction of the Delta Wing as a potential design. And you know, a lot of people were really in favor of the Delta Wing not being the spec car for the series. I mean, because that's what we were looking at, right? We were looking at who's going to build the singular chassis. People were like, well, I don't think I want that to be the chassis. However, if you talk to people, you found that a lot of them would have been very welcoming to the notion of, sure, bring it, run it, let's see how it does against everybody else. You know, kind of like back in the day, you know, how's a gas turbine car going to run against everything else? I don't know, bring it. And so I think people would have been more accepting of the Delta Wing design in that sort of circumstance as opposed to having 33 of them. And so I don't know that we officially heard the Garage 34 concept be kicked around at that time, but I think that's where the seed was.
Mm. All right. Well, obviously, I don't want to give too many spoilers away from our article, obviously, because that is the most important thing at the moment is getting the art. Yeah. Well, that's I say again, sir, that it is not fair. But what I will say is I find my preview for the article will be that it's going to be very difficult, I think, anyways, to get to really talk about this in a serious light with with a spec series and a series that's already shown that it is not wanting to conform essentially to allowing technology into the series, they say anyways. So, you know, we'll see exactly what happens or where it goes. I'm, you know, obviously I'm I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping on hope that it works out well, but we'll see what happens at the end of the day. So I don't want to get too much into it. Like I said, please swing by openpaddock.net this week to see exactly what myself and Doug have to talk about. So that being said, we will now move on to the next race, by the way, for IndyCar, obviously, season opener at St. Petersburg on March 30th. So stay tuned as we build up to that. And, Doug, I'll turn it over to you for the Mazda Road Indy and the Winterfest that is currently ongoing.
Yeah, over the weekend, of course, while Mike and I were down in Salem, trudging through the beautiful Mark Twain National Forest in the northern reaches of the Ozark Mountains. Beautiful country down there. Oh, man. But anyway, more about that later. While we were doing that, the Mazda Road to Indy Series, all three rungs were down at NOLA. I guess, you know, we've had this. I don't know what to call this joint. But it's beautiful. Yeah, NOLA. But beautiful race course down in New Orleans, Louisiana, or outside of New Orleans, or Nolens, I should say. Had the first two rounds there this past weekend, and today, Tuesday, they had the first of their two rounds at Barber Motorsports Park. And so it's well underway. Tomorrow is the last day. You can follow on at USF2000.com, Pro Mazda Championship.com and IndyLights.com. They all have live timing and scoring, so you can check and see what's going on. But you know, here's the gist of it. There's been some interesting players to kind of rise to the top. First, in the first round, first of three races at NOLA, was won by Heinrich Ferruseth, J Motorsports. We've talked about Heinrich before and how he's really been improving since his national class win in the Formula Enterprise back when we had them. Day two was taken down by R.C. Enerson, another national class driver from back in the day, stepping up to show some serious muscle in the Van Diemen's. And day three, it was Clark Tope who took the top honors. Today, it was Michael Epps who came away with a pair of victories. And so, great job by Mr. Epps, Ballardi Auto Racing, just dominating today. And that really helps Ballardi in the overall championship, stepping just ahead of Team E. And they lead the championship now 121 to 90 points. R.C. Enerson with very, very consistent races all five rounds so far, with one race left tomorrow. R.C. Enerson is leading the drivers' points championship, 114 to 107 over Mr. Epps. And so, you know, Enerson is you know, we've seen him run very strong in the past, but I think this year he may have what it takes, may have everything together to really make a run at some race wins, and a championship run. That's going to be tough, but I think everything is right for he and his team this year. It could happen. So Anderson's definitely going to be one to. Going to be one to watch, and of course Epps was just outstanding today. Struggled a little bit at New Orleans, but just dominant at Barber. So that was the USF 2000 action in Pro Mazda. First of all, USF 2000 has six races total, three and three. three at New Orleans, three at Barber. The Pro Mazda Championship has four races total, two and two. Race number one at New Orleans was won by Spencer Pigot, won from pole, and Shelby Blackstock. Of course, you know Shelby Blackstock, that sports car racer who didn't they win the Daytona race in the Continental Series this year?
I've heard something about this.
I was
thinking that was right. But anyway, Blackstock is an interesting character. I don't know what direction he's going to go. Whether he stays with open wheel or stays with the sports car, he's pretty good at both. And he had a pretty good run up at Pigot, but just couldn't catch up. Got around everybody else, but never could catch Spencer. So Spencer running for Juncos Racing this year just dominates race number one. In race number two, again, Spencer Pigot got to start from the front, but Garrett Grist ends up winning the day for Andretti Autosport. And so fantastic run by Grist. We saw this last year where every once in a while Grist would have everything absolutely perfect and together, and he had turned in a great race result, and he did that here in race two. Today, race number one at Barber Motorsports Park, Pigot was back to his old habits. He secured pole position and ran away from the field. Two easy wins for Pigot in one second place. That puts him in pretty good position for the Winterfest. I'm trying to see if I've got the point tallies here. And no, but I think unless something really tragic happens, I think that Pigot is going to be your Winterfest champion in Pro Mazda. Now, joining them, not in competition, but at least on track for testing, was the Indy Lights guys. So 11 drivers came down to New Orleans for the Indy Lights, which is more than what showed up for the races last year. So this is a good sign. There's a lot of, I think, really cool things happening in Lights in the Mazda Road Indy this year. We're definitely seeing an uptick in preseason testing and interest and participation. There's a lot of good deals coming together. I think this is the road to recovery year. We're going to start seeing these ladder programs really develop back into a level of very healthy participation. But anyway, Gabby Chavez, again for Bilardi Auto Racing. So Bilardi having a good time down there in New Orleans. Gabby Chavez set the fast time with a best lap of 127.64, and right behind him, a couple of tenths, about a quarter of a second, was Matthew Brabham of Andretti Autosport. Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport had Luis Razia and Juan Pablo Garcia, and Juan Petrohedra. And Jack Harvey. None of them were really. I mean, Luis Razia, he came in third and really wasn't that far off of Brabham, but it's not where we're used to seeing Schmidt. Let me put it that way. It's not where we're used to seeing Schmidt. We're used to seeing them right there at the top. Zach Veach did not have a good weekend. He ended up sliding in 10th, right behind Scott Anderson of FanForce United. So I think Veach and their squad have some work to do. Bilardi Auto Racing with Gabby Chavez, you know, them and Matthew Brabham, I think those are your – those may be your two drivers to watch this year. You know, I've been high on Chavez for a while. The end of the – it would have been the 2012 season, you know, it's like something clicked. Man, he really started to show some serious pace. And he had some great races last year too. But this year, I think he might have a good opportunity to run for the championship. We'll see. But anyway, so one more race for both USF 2000 and Pro Mazda tomorrow. And then we'll wrap it all up and see what all this means for the Mazda Road to Indy series, USF 2000 Pro Mazda Indy Lights, as we get ready to go down to St. Petersburg and start the season.
All right.
Not that far away.
Seems so far away with Raleigh having started January.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Because, but, you know, there's no such thing as a rain delay with Raleigh.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, okay. You know, I kept seeing this, and actually there were some really clever things. Dave Cosbum of Got Code, he put up a picture on Facebook. He had found his way to to one of the water crossings at 100 Acre. And, you know, his car and spray water. And so it was making fun of the whole NASCAR rain delay. It's like, rain delay? In Raleigh, we make it rain.
Nice.
That's clever.
There was a few Twitter posts that were saying, yeah, rain delay? That's so cute.
Mm-hmm. However, you know, one of the things that people just don't get is that this is an oval race, close quarters, yes, at 200 miles an hour.
200 miles an hour.
Yeah, you cannot do that.
Yards away from
a few drops of water and you're done.
Right. And you say, well, you put on rain tires. No, it doesn't matter.
Not in an oval.
Not yeah, on that track. Not when you're doing 200 plus.
No, it, you know, to race in the rain on an oval is suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah, pure and simple. So, yeah, it made for a lot of nice old fodder, but, you know, in reality, no, you just don't do that.
So, yeah, rally coverage. You know, normally I'm the rally guy, but I wasn't actually physically at the event. So before we go into talking about who won and all that stuff, let's kind of get the behind the scenes. It was, of course, Mr. Douglas Patterson and Mike Weitzel, very white. Soul.
Oh my goodness.
We're at the event on Friday and Saturday last weekend, taking in the festivities and enjoying the crowd, at least for one of the 2 days of the event. Sounds like there was quite the crowd there, wasn't there?
Yeah, Saturday had a really good turnout. Of course, what didn't hurt was that we had absolute Chamber of Commerce weather. Oh, wow. In fact, Friday night, we were at stage 6, I believe, was it, Mike?
Yeah.
And, wow, it was cold. It was really cold. And
cold, but clear.
But well, yes. And they're, yeah, you know, because of one, the other.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, no clouds to hold the heat in.
Yeah, and, you know, I wish I had thought about it. And I had my tripod with me, White, so I should have brought it down. And I saw a really magnificent photo that someone had posted from the spectator area that we were at. They set their camera up on a tripod back behind all the competitors and kind of had it angled up a little bit, so you had the competitors the spectators right on the bottom edge of the frame, and you know, nice wide angle, and left the shutter open for like 30 seconds, something like that, you know, long exposure. And so you got the
headlights going through and the stars.
Yes, and it was gorgeous.
Cool. Oh, that would be neat.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at that. It's like, how did I miss that? Oh, that's such a beautiful idea. And so now I want a time machine. I want to go back because I want to take that shot. But
yeah,
no. White Mike, we're going back to the future.
We got all bundled up on Saturday, thinking that, you know, we're not going to be caught out again in this morning stage. And we immediately were like, nope, it's short sleeves.
Wow. Yeah, I'll tell you, like you said, Chamber of Commerce weather. But on Friday when we got out there and we got the Park Exposé and there were tens of fans, and then when we got to the Super Special at Potosi and there were literally tens of fans.
Yeah, no. That's not hyperbole. That is literally there were tens of fans.
You posted of the Super Special looked a little bleak with people hanging around.
Yeah, a few more people filled in since I had taken that photo. But it still wasn't the crowds that I remembered on Friday.
But it is Friday, right? You know, people have to work.
It is Friday. It is Friday. And so, yeah, there is that. Certainly there is that. But, yeah, the Saturday attendance, which is really where the majority of the rally is, and that's their main Park Exposé, a main street there in Salem. And if you go to Facebook and look at our cover photo, that are – brilliant GoPro photographer Mike Weitzel took with our GoPro on his stick.
Nice.
It's, you know, you see just what a madhouse.
The entire main street is completely packed with people.
Yeah, yeah.
That is impressive.
And what's in the foreground is all this mass of humanity that wants Ken Block's autograph.
Oh, of course.
So
Pastrana just can't get better than that when it comes to fan access.
You know, and I never saw Pastrana all weekend.
I saw pictures of him with people, but
we never saw him. I mean, we were at both Park Exposés. We were at service one day and all of that, and you know, never saw him. Never saw his face once. That may have had something to do with his broken leg, but
I think you know, it's not that he was making himself scarce, because you know, Travis doesn't do that.
I heard a quick report that he was he had just gotten done with you know, some stages, you know, going to the service, and you know, of course, the mob of people and stuff. And he's like, he literally told the fans, "Look, I got to go retape up my leg and ice it real quick, 12 minutes, and I'll be back." And wouldn't you know it, on the dot, he comes back out to meet the fans.
Yeah. And so I think Weitzel and I just ended up being at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Rye on rye.
Yeah.
Never know. You never know what that was about.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it was. You know, go ahead.
One more comment about the weather. I just throw this in before you jump into another comment on the competition. But the weather, it was projected to be a high of 53 on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was a high of 57 on Friday, and it got super chilly that night. And I'm thinking, ooh, I don't want to deal with that. So I put on the long johns just ready for a slightly chilly day. And we get out there, and it gets up to 68 on Saturday.
68 in the sun. Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and windy and sunny.
Windy,
and,
yes.
And so we're out there going, this is awesome.
I had 68 with the beers. Cannot complain at all.
No.
Had to make a quick trip into one of the porta potties to liberate myself of my long johns.
Goodness.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't going to do it in my car.
Yeah.
Oh my. Actually, we're in your car.
That was Saturday. Yeah. We're in my car.
Yeah. But no, Josh Tons, of course, was down there with us doing double duty, helping out his team, Poor Boy Racing, and taking some brilliant photos for us. I was with Mike. I was playing more the spectator role this year instead of the photographer role. I'm working on some photos right now, but there are some really amazing ones taken by Josh, and they'll be hitting the site pretty soon. There's a couple attached to some review articles that he has of not just the national event, but the two regional events as well. So you know, make sure to come over and check out his shots from the weekend, because they are really just stunning.
You know, fantastic. I saw especially like his one that he did of Higgins going by. Oh my gosh, that shot is so surreal. I mean, almost it looks almost fake. It's so perfectly done. That is my new desktop wallpaper.
Nice.
So, yeah, I guess while you guys were there and hanging out and visiting and whatnot with, you know, did you guys get any behind the scenes with any of the teams or talk to any fans or anything?
We talked to a few fans, and you know, but doing the spectator thing this year as opposed to the more you know, rally photographer type of thing, didn't spend a lot of time talking to you know, to drivers and doing the typical driver interview type of thing. I do have a feature article in mind that I'm putting together, and I've got some things from some fans about how different spectating a rally is versus say spectating a circuit race. I mean, it is a completely different thing, of course, as you well know. I think that most people, most of the fans that I talked to, you know, thought it was brilliant. The one thing that we all notice that it's challenging to follow a rally from the ground. You know,
it is. Although there is one thing that really helps following a rally a lot, and that is
coverage.
No, well, that definitely helps too. But
not NeoZerks.
Yeah, right.
It's actually on a longer stage. Being at least halfway near to the end of it, I don't know where the spectator points are, but having a stopwatch. Mm. Because you know how far apart the cars start.
Right.
So knowing that information, you can see who is pushing to try and catch up to the other guy.
That sounds
and
like work.
And having just a simple stopwatch is so effective to know who is really gaining on who.
No, you're right. You're right. We were doing that at Mid-Ohio, if you remember.
Yeah, indeed.
With Kimball,
I had out my iPhone and I was doing the whole thing. But
yeah, we were really tracking.
Yeah,
that's
one thing I will say. Yeah, attending this rally this weekend and comparing it to you know, traditional races that I've been to, I don't feel like I have to work very hard when I'm at the track to figure out who's in what position and by how much. I mean, some places it's harder to do than others, but for the most part, I don't feel like I have a hard time doing that. Now, at this rally, I did.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it was 10 o'clock at night, and we were refreshing Rally America's website to make sure that Block had won, and we had still not seen any publishing of the results.
Yeah,
their official results are a little slow in coming because they have to verify everything, you know, go through all the double checking before it goes to the website. So you can't even get preliminary stuff.
This was well after the podium ceremony, and we could not find anything. When you go out to the stages, you have no idea who's in what position, and you'd think that just a simple whiteboard at each stage with a listing of times before the stage started would be beneficial to, you know, those who are coming to spectate. But really,
that would be a good idea, at least, and maybe just to kind of throw this in there. I know at Oregon Trail, in the specific spectator points, they actually have like a DJ kind of guy there.
Yeah. Hey, this sounds familiar, Mike.
Were having these conversations this weekend.
And they have a guy that actually has at least some information from at least the previous stages, maybe not just where it was just the stage before, but from maybe how they started that morning, who was in the lead and by how much or something like that. So it won't be exact, but at least gives you some information as to who's leading and whatnot for the spectators to enjoy. Not to mention, you know, giving some technical details of what to look for as they approach the corner that you're at or whatever. Do they not have that there?
No.
Get out of our heads.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, honestly, as a spectator at this Rally America event, this is what I felt the role of a spectator was. Ooh, look, Ken Block, let's get an autograph. Ooh, look, Cars in the Woods, wouldn't that cool?
Yeah, and that's
beyond that, there was no publishing of positions. There was no way that I could discern, that I could find out the positions on the track. Even at the you know, super special or at the service stages, there was no board that indicated any sort of positioning for the race.
At the service park, there was. We just didn't go there. There's the PRRV. PRRV, per? Let's not go there.
we went there before the show.
No. but no, outside of the RV that Rally America has, they have a scoreboard there, and so you can always go there and check on the rally stats. And in previous years, I've made extensive use of that. But I mean, that's at service.
So they need to relay that. Exactly. They need to relay that information by a walkie-talkie, CB, something, mm-hmm. to people that are out at the stage, because obviously cell phones don't always work when you're out in the woods.
No, there was no cell signal. So, yeah.
Right, exactly. So there needs to be some sort of relay of that information for the spectators to have something tangible to use. And especially with the start order this year, which is a little bit different, right?
Yeah, having the dust money this, up there, right?
Right, exactly. So you now have the rabbit that starts the event instead of who is just the fastest qualifying speed. Used to be just so somebody wouldn't catch up to the other person, you'd have whoever the fastest qualifier was, which would almost always be Ken Block because the Fiesta that he's got is a little bit quicker.
That's no Fiesta. The only thing Fiesta about that car is the badge on the front.
I will disagree with that because it does start with a true manufacturer chassis when it comes to rally. It is not a tubular frame that is built from the ground up to be just a racing car.
Okay.
It starts from a factory chassis. Yes, it's gutted and then turned into a racing car. But it's unlike other forms of sport where it's just – I mean, look at NASCAR. It is not anything like the car.
No.
In rally, it is.
It's kind of like the difference between, you know, a normal human and the $6 million man.
Okay.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
All right. I'll give you that. Anyway – but yeah, so they have that different starting order this time, and I guess Adam Yeoman with FY Racing ended up starting out ahead of Ken Block. Now, you know, one thing that we were talking about last week, again with the weather, was that we were worried about, you know, this downpour that was supposed to come in on Thursday and really kind of mud things up, plus everything thawing out from all of the snows and stuff. But it sounds like neither of those ended up happening. The rain ended up missing the entire area just by just a little bit, I think by about 50 miles or something, stayed to the north. And then so it stayed dry through then and stayed dry through the whole weekend. So that wasn't a factor. So I'm guessing, though, it was still cold enough and there was enough moisture in the ground that there wasn't any dust issues as well. So having Adam Yeoman as the rabbit in front of Ken Block before David Higgins and the rest, I'm guessing that wasn't a factor for him at all.
Well,
is that right?
Well, here's the thing. Here's how the weather came out. You know, there was a lot of subsoil moisture. Mike, you noticed this as we were walking back from one of the stages, that the ground was spongy. you know how the completely saturated soil, you know, is, especially clay. So it was spongy, but on the stages where, you know, you had traffic, and more open terrain, the combination of the sunshine and the winds really, really helped dry up the roads. And that allowed the dust to start kicking up. Now, it wasn't like it was Sean when we were there a couple years ago. There were just these epic clouds of dust, right?
Yeah, that was probably the most dust. I mean, I've been to the Middle East for crying out loud and not seen that much dust. So
it was insane.
That was so bad.
You know, it's not that it was a dust-free event, but it wasn't a major factor.
Gotcha. And it sounds like also that there was plenty of winds, at least on Saturday, that would make that a non-issue with the separation between the cars.
Yeah, the separation was enough. I mean, when the next car came through, and I've got some video that I'll show you.
Good. We need to update that YouTube channel of ours for the open paddock.
Yeah. But anyway, so you'll see that block comes by and nice clear picture, and then everybody from there on out has this little haze to it. it never completely settled, but it wasn't a hindrance to visibility.
Understood.
Yeah, I don't really feel like any time we saw the cars go by that a car was visibly hindered by the dust. The dust went down fairly quickly, though that one shot that we have of Ken Block going through at the Rolla Triangle, man, that was a great video because it's just like Doug said, there was just this shockwave of dust that just, you know, approached the camera.
Oh, you're
went
thinking
over
of that,
it like it was a nuclear blast, you know.
you're thinking of the first hairpin that we were at on Saturday, right?
Is that what it was?
Yeah. And so there's just this wall of dirt that hits the camera. It's pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Nice stuff. I can't wait to see it. So, yeah, it sounded like Ken Block, you know, as we've mentioned his name enough already, but, I mean, he started out leading the event. And actually, I must say, Adam Yeoman, how intimidating has that got to be when you're in an older Subaru? Yeah, it's open class still, but he's got an 04, I think it is, and or maybe it's an 05 or something like that. And Block is you're the rabbit, and Block is trying to basically catch you. I mean, that's kind of intimidating for such a young driver who's been he's been in it for a number of years, but he's still been learning the trade. I know that learning pace notes, creating his own, is something he's been really working on in just the last year or two, and trying to improve his pace. And wow, having Block with his all that horsepower catching up to you, that's got to be intimidating.
He wasn't behind Block in front of Block for very long.
Yeah, stage six, we noticed that Block came by first ahead of Yeoman.
Now, see, it sounded like there was a little bit of controversy there. So the way it started out,
there was.
Higgins was not happy.
So
on Friday, there was obviously the first couple of stages in the afternoon. There was a shakedown that morning, or was that on Thursday?
Friday morning was shakedown, right?
Okay, so Friday morning was shakedown. Then later in the afternoon, they do the first loop of stages, and then they do the last loop in the dark, right? Fading light into dark for the last couple of stages.
It was dark.
And it was full dark.
Stars out now.
And I remember hearing, through the feeds there that, it was unusual that suddenly Ken Block was out in front, and Adam Yeoman was showing up later. Higgins seemed to be pretty upset about that because now he had the slower driver in front of him, and Block had a free road. In one version of that, I heard that Yeoman had actually taken a wrong turn, had an issue with his car as well, and it took him a while to get going, ended up waiting because he knew Ken Block was catching so fast, and then ended up getting back on the road. But it sounds like there's some controversy whether or not he made some deal or something that he just pull over and wait at some point and not let the faster car just catch up to him and end up being blinded by his dust in the dark. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, what can you say?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, in the end, at the end of day two, I mean, Higgins was about 20 seconds behind Block, so he's a little ways behind on such a fast event. But, yeah, at the end of day one. But, you know, not insurmountable by any means.
They were both hitting the bogey time most of the day. Higgins had a tire go down, and that accounted for something like his 20-second gap.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Yeah, Higgins did have a tire issue. And for those that aren't familiar, bogey time, what that means is there is an 80-mile-per-hour speed limit that Rally America has, where if your average speed for the entire stage goes above 80 miles per hour, you automatically get whatever 80 miles per hour is. Whatever your time was, if you calculate it out to 80 miles per hour, that's what you're going to get for time. and you're not going to – basically, you can't improve your pace any better than that. The reason behind it that I've been hearing is it's completely for insurance purposes for the sanctioning body. The idea is to slow these cars down. It doesn't behoove them to go to the point of a dangerous pace because it's not going to improve their overall time. Well, they're still going to – they're race drivers. I'm sorry. You go out there, you're going to freaking push. That's your job, right?
Mr. Weitzel, I lay this at your feet, you being the USAC guy. Mm-hmm. This isn't USAC the body through which Rally America gets their insurance?
Yeah. So what do I think about the bogey time?
No, I'm just blaming you. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, jeez.
Your fault.
But did this rule come about because of USAC, or
no,
was it in place beforehand?
Well,
it's
whoever.
Before.
What? Oh, was it?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because when you look, we've always talked about the speed as being an issue. I personally, if I was in the position, I would just push. I'd be like, screw you, give me 80 miles an hour then, but I'm going flat out and having fun, because what you always hear from the drivers, especially like Ken Block and those guys who have the cars that can really open up, is the 100 Acre Wood Rally really presents stages that are just flat out but fun to drive.
And challenging to drive.
It is the fastest event in the season. We've got some fast stages over here at Oregon Trail. But when I was out last year, when I was a volunteer, which I'm going to do again this year, I was out on the Clausen stage, which has some really long straights. I mean, you know, mile-long straight. And the number of hay bale things that we had to put up for it to make a false chicane for the drivers to go through so that way they'd slow down their average speed was just insane. It's like, oh, nope, we gone a little ways. Got to stop, pull out the hay bales out of the back of the truck and set up another set of cones around them and all that stuff. And that's their way of dealing with this speed issue and trying to keep it in their mind safe. Maybe that's what they need to add to 100 Acre Wood, you know, throw in some extra chicanes on some of those really fast stages or something. Then it can't be an argument.
There was some talk about that, putting up some not hay bales, but some water barrels.
Cut down a few trees.
Oh, my.
But the thing is, I mean, that's a way that you can take away the argument, right? I mean, even if you don't like the fact that, oh, man, they're slowing the cars down.
Which I don't.
Well, I mean, a tight and twisty stage is going to do that automatically anyways, does it naturally. Yes, you're doing it artificially for the road, but the thing is, the drivers can't bitch.
Oh, yes, they can. They can with great efficiency. Are you kidding me?
Shaw.
Are you new to motorsport?
Right.
Shaw has now earned the title of Tilkey, and Tilkey-fying our rally stages in North America. So, well done, sir. Next thing you know, he'll be saying, you know what we should really do to make rally racing great is add sprinklers and Koopa shells.
And medals.
Yes, medals. And medals. Wait, that's X Games. We got that already.
Well, you know, like I said, if they're going to automatically artificially adjust their times anyway,
true.
Why not, I guess.
Yeah.
They've been doing that in the WRC and in rallies for decades. So I guess I don't see as much of a problem with something that's, you know, something that's common for the sport anyhow. Mm. So day one, it sounded like that, you know, Higgins was doing pretty well other than his little flat that he had, had a tire going down. Lestage was in third, and Pastrana was hanging out in fourth place, just, you know, trying to keep up and get used to being back in a car again and happily making it past stage one.
And the super special.
And then, of course, Adam Yeoman, of course, in the open class there, ended up, you know, being in fourth there at the end of day one. But then came day two, and it sounds like there was a little bit of drama. I believe you guys were spectating, and you're like, what happened to Higgins?
Yeah, where'd he go? It was stage 10, was it, sir?
Nine or ten, I can't remember the exact number. But
anyway, we're waiting.
It was the first loop in the morning, though, right?
Yeah. So no, it had to have been stage 10 because there was a stage ahead of us, and we're like, well, where's Higgins? And he just never showed up. And we're like, oh, well, crap. And this was funny because you know, I was talking with one of the marshals, and you know, he was commenting how you know, Higgins was really just Mr. Consistency. He is our Iceman in Rally America, right? He never puts a wheel wrong. You know, he rarely damages the car. You know, if he does, he still gets it back to service far more often than not. And then
like
all
I said,
of a sudden,
he's low.
Bam, he's out. He's like, ah.
Well, it turns out what happened to Higgins was of no fault of his own, from the sounds of it. The car started to run on three cylinders, and when they pulled over, they saw oil leaking like crazy, and to save the engine, they just shut it down and said, that's it.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I would have ran – I would kept running and say, wow, looks like
you can run it.
Stopped.
I'm a factory effort. Surely we got the money for this. Let's just keep running, boys.
Well, you know, it would make more sense if the next after that, when that happened, it was going to be just to make it into service. And what these guys can do in the service parks, those mechanics are amazing. They're better than in any other form of motorsport, in my opinion. What those guys can do in a rally service park, but. Yeah, there was more stages to go, and there's no way it would have made it. So you might as well just pull over and be done.
Yeah.
And then Antoine Lestage on day two, he was, so I was like, wow, congratulations. Now I've moved up to second place for a little while. And then it sounds like he had an issue as well. From what I hear, he had a problem with the power steering, and then to find out actually a belt came off and he was overheating as well, and he ended up having to pull over and DNF as well. So that meant Ken Block wins the event for the seventh time. Travis Pastrana getting second place.
Woohoo! I was close.
Not only did he finish, but he finishes on the podium. Not bad, really. I mean,
five minutes behind.
Yeah, right.
With a broken foot, though.
True.
And a new co-driver.
And that's the thing. And that's the thing. They just wanted to come out and show some consistency, show some pace, get him back familiar with the car and all that. You know, this is his return to rally racing after some time off. You know, it's not expected he's going to come out and win the event. And, you know, he acquitted himself well. However, he would have been fourth if Higgins and, you know, Lestage didn't run into their problems. So.
And these are the kinds of things that determine championships when you really think about it, because we're still early in the season with Block not running the entire season. This is a huge coup for Pastrana and his points aspirations, because the guy is in
season?
Pastrana is, yeah. I thought. So,
yes, sounds like.
So now you've got Pastrana and really the catbird seat over his teammate, David Higgins. And you can tell that Higgins maybe was, I don't know, I don't want to say feeling the pressure, but I mean, let's be honest here, folks. Pastrana's performances are only going to get better as the season goes on. And this is a huge blow for Mr. Higgins in retaining his championship, especially now with Pastrana getting that second place.
And then beyond that, nobody's there to see David Higgins.
Sadly, because I think
people are. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. True statement.
Yeah.
True statement. But people are there to see Travis Pastrana because they want to ask him about Nitro Circus and foam pit size blocks and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
He's also got that personality, too, you know.
Yeah, indeed. You know, he is a sponsor's dream. The guy is a massive sponsor's dream. It was very interesting to go out and see the monster slash rock star slash Red Bull energy drink competition we saw this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember those. Man, I'm kind of mad that I wasn't there just so I could have got some free samples.
Oh yeah, and Mike got some of that the monster stuff.
Zero.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that stuff is so good. My favorite is the red one, and I also like the white one.
You know, yeah, what's I get funny the white can. All of that stuff to me tastes like freaking cough syrup. It's terrible, but you know what? I totally support them for supporting the motorsports that I like, so I can't have anything against them. I just want to buy their product.
I'm with you, Shaw. I'm with you. They said, would you like a free one? I'm like, no.
I'd have been like, hell yes.
I was heavily supporting Monster Rehab this weekend.
Ooh, nice. Did you get the Rojo tea?
Especially on Sunday.
Saturday.
Recovery Sunday.
Friday morning and Sunday morning, it was very necessary.
Hey, I'm saying that Rojo tea, I think it's fantastic. The Rojo tea, you know, Monster and Rehab.
I like the tea plus lemonade, the yellow can. I really like that. The Rojo isn't my favorite, but
come on.
Just because I don't like the things you like, Sean.
You have to. You have to. It's the rules.
Says Stalin.
Well, what exactly. I was going to say.
Exactly.
You know what impressed me so much about Pastrana in the weekend is that he was able to hold himself back. That's something I've not really seen from Pastrana in a while. He is such a go-getter, and he's so aggressive. To see him actually tone it down and be able to complete the stages like he did and not be worried about not having to win, that is such a maturity increase in his driving ability that I don't think I've ever seen before, which I think makes him a bigger threat going forward. But for Higgins – what you have to also understand about Higgins, his DNF here was the first time in an amazing streak of 22 consecutive podium finishes that he's had. Mm-hmm. 22 consecutive podium finishes. Holy crap.
We kind of talked about this when they brought Higgins in for, you know, SRT USA. You know, he's an accomplished rally racer that's come in from some of these European series that have real competition, and nothing against Rally America, but they have nothing compared to the level of competition they have over in Europe. So you bring this guy who's a vetted rally ace, put him in that car, and we were kind of expecting him to be the class of the series for a long time to come, and he has been.
He has been. I mean, the only competition he's had is Ken Block, who obviously learned through the WRC, you know, how to do his own pace notes and increase his speed. And, you know, it came down to the last event last year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's got the car also to help out, but that Subaru is no slouch by any means.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and even beyond that, it's when Ken Block shows up to race because, you know,
exactly.
depending on what his schedule is, he's not there for the full season. This year he's not, and a couple of years ago he wasn't either because of WRC stuff. So
you know, just kind of go through the rest of the podium there. So you had Ken Block winning, Travis Pastrana in second, Adam Yeoman gets third, a very respectable third for a guy that's, you know, still learning the ropes a bit and trying to get his consistency up there. That was awesome that he ended up getting third. I think the last time I saw him on a podium was at Oregon Trail out here in 2011. I think he made it to the podium out here 2011 or 2012. And that's because everybody else was breaking down. So really good on him to make that.
That's kind of what happened this year, or, you know, this last weekend as well. And, sure. You know, I know there's going to be those people that say, well, you just kind of lucked into the podium. You know, one of the big parts of rally is not tearing up your car.
Yep. You know, it is managing, yeah, especially some of the rougher events. Actually, that's a specific one to maybe not so much with 100 Acre Wood, to be honest. 100 Acre Wood, it's very smooth. it's not.
Mr. Weitzel, would you care to educate Mr. Shaw on the smoothness of the roads?
We waited until the nice little green safety truck went through and picked up one of the Rally America photogs and took him to the end of the stage where his wife was meeting him. And that would be on stage 13 where you've got the Rolla Triangle and the cattle jump.
But that was after the cars went through, right?
It was after the cars went through.
Well, still.
And here, Mike, no, it wasn't that. My comments to Doug were, I could not even fathom trying to drive fast on this road. I mean, because, you know, they scream down a hill that has lots and lots of potholes and ruts and everything like that on it. And this
giant
wasn't just because they were
rocks.
Yeah, giant rocks, all that kind of stuff. And then you go over a basically a water crossing or a little bridge, and it's just this thin little strip of concrete with drop-offs on either side. And then you scream up another hill.
And you better hit it
through
perfect
corners
that
are off camber and just a mess. And then you get to that freaking cattle jump. Oh, my goodness.
You know,
balls of steel.
Yes.
More power to them. I fancy myself as somebody who enjoys back road driving. I would not enjoy that.
All right. Well, you win there, because I just know specifically, you know, some stages out here, because when I was out as a volunteer, you know, I was, you know, taking my little Subaru Outback out on the stages to, you know, block off some roads and whatnot to prevent people coming in from some of the forest roads there. And, you know, I noticed that the size of the rocks, the base gravel that's underneath, you got kind of a top gravel over here, mm-hmm. and then underneath is this big, chunky, big rock stuff underneath that's really freaking rough. We've got a stage over here called Ketchum. So I guess maybe it is similar over there, because a lot of the video footage I've seen has been seemed like smoother dirt versus chunky gravel.
Well, that's because you're seeing video. You're not seeing it, you know,
up close.
Yeah, up close. You know, you're not seeing stills. I think I've got some stills I'll send your way, and it may change your mind.
Okay. So over here it seems awfully rough. There's certain stages where people are happy if they only get one puncture. when they get through it. So I guess I wasn't it didn't seem like 100 Acre Wood was quite that rough in comparison, but you know, it can vary from stage to stage as well. So you know, but yeah, I guess you're right. You know, Adam definitely managed his car and made sure that he was there for the finish. Adam's done a lot of extensive training in the last year. He ended up going actually over to Europe and training with David Higgins at the Higgins Rally School. They have actually a rally school over there in Wales. It's the family business. And then he's also got on his team Will Orders. If you remember Will, he's the Australian mm-hmm. who came over with that beast of a Nissan Silvia. Nissan Silvia, which basically are 240SX. With 450 horsepower turboed engine on that thing. That was just a beast on the stages a couple years back. And he's been in the development with that GT86 with the Nameless Performance guys. And so he's teamed up with Adam Yeoman to kind of help him out, kind of mentor him a little bit too, and help out with the team. So he's been you know, improving, I think, dramatically in this last year. And I think we'll see that kind of going forward. But yeah, he definitely obviously benefited from the other guys having issues. But part of that is how you rally, right? But moving on to Super Production is got to be one of the tightest classes that we'll have throughout the season. And Nick Roberts and Rhiannon Gelsomino, which is Alec Gelsomino's wife. Rhiannon was Brendan Reeves' sister. And they won the two-wheel drive last year. She's now co-driving for Nick Roberts, who's got this plaid.
Yes.
This blue plaid
awesome
with
car.
Pink or purple accent. I mean, it looks like some like country bumpkin, like brush proper or whatever, you know,
now,
shirt.
You know what it looks like? It looks like the Buchanan. I think this was the Buchanan tartan.
Nice.
Is that what it's supposed to be?
No, it wasn't. They were actually after something that this was a design that I think one of their sponsors partners had when they did the wrap. I had looked at it. Oh no. They were going to do some a different specific tartan type of pattern, they ran into royalty issues. I think is the story. Josh was with me when we were talking about this. So I'll have to pick his brain about it. But yeah, I thought it reminded me of the Buchanan family tartan. And if you've ever seen the Buchanan tartan, it is hideous. a good friend of mine is a Buchanan, and he was getting a killer. Well, you should get your own tartan. He's like, yeah, no. And then he showed me his tartan. I'm like, oh, that's unfortunate. This is kind of what this plan reminded me of. But it looked great on a car. You know, on a car, it was fantastic.
I saw a little girl at Park Exposé that she had matching pants. They were great.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome. Well, you know, Nick Roberts with Rhiannon, you know, he took some classes over at her and Alex have a kind of a training school that they've got for drivers and co-drivers and that they're starting up. And he went over and took some training from them. And obviously for this young man, it helped out quite a bit because right away from day one, he pulled out a lead that it couldn't be matched. David Sterics, who were always so well known with just when he's there, can just dominate. Well, his car apparently has had overheating issues. So he ended up dropping back. Car kept going into safe mode. So really the closest competition he had was Dylan Van Way, who's really been quick. Last year he had just started into the super production, just did a couple events in that, switching from two-wheel drive. And he's been really fast in that car, but he was really trying to judge his pace at 100 Acre after, you know, the slippery stuff at Snowdrift. He wanted to get used to the gravel again. And it took him a while to get the feel, and he was over a half a minute back by the end of day one, and it just didn't get any better into day two, and ended up finishing 48 seconds back behind Nick Roberts and Rhiannon Gelsomino. So good effort on them to get second place. Sadly, the other veteran that we're used to seeing is Lachlan O'Sullivan in Super Production. But on his shakedown, he didn't make it past the first turn.
I didn't realize it was that early.
Oh, yeah.
I knew he went off in shakedown, but I didn't realize how soon.
It was the first turn. It was a downhill section, a little bit slippery, and he just, you know, hits the brakes and the car just kind of steps out and he doesn't get control again and just smacks into a tree. And their event was just done. Just not enough time to repair the car in time for the afternoon stages, because the shakedown is on the same day as the event start. So,
right. Yeah. Shakedown is Friday morning. Then you have a noon expose. And I think first stage of the rally was at 1:30.
Exactly. So really, it was the Roberts and Van Way show for Super Production. The only other competitor in that would have been Evan Klein, who was entered in as a regional competitor. And
he had a magnificent looking car, by the way.
Really? Describe it.
It was an army car.
Oh,
it went all Sherman tank with it.
It had a nice white star on the door.
Yep, and matte, awesome. And that matte olive green, it was brilliant. And the numbers, white spray paint stencil, so it was like perfect. it was really a clever scheme.
Well, unfortunately, at the very end, Sterics ended up fixing some of his issues with the overheating and whatnot, and he ended up crawling back up, and he ended up beating out Evan Klein in the very last stage, 0.3 seconds, 3/10 of a second. He ends up beating him by to get the third spot on the podium.
Goodness.
Over so how many miles?
Exactly, right? actually, I don't know the total mileage of the event. I'd have to look that up. But that's pretty phenomenal to be able to push that last little bit and win by or end up getting the podium by 3/10 of a second in a rally. That's pretty phenomenal stuff. Moving on to two-wheel drive, we had, of course, the Andrew Comrie Picard in the Ford Fiesta and Matthew Johnson in the Scion, which in these stages that are faster, you'd think that the Scion had the advantage. And specifically, ACP, he did some great interviews, by the way. If you go on to SoundCloud, I don't know if any of you guys listen to some of that stuff. Rally America has where they do interviews with drivers through SoundCloud. And they had a great back and forth with Matthew Johnson and Comrie and ACP. And those two guys, ACP is like, I know everything about the car Matthew's driving. And I know where he's got an advantage and where he doesn't. And he's like saying that it was actually distracting me when I'm driving down the stage. It's like, oh my gosh, I know he's got me here. You know, but because he's thinking about that instead of what he's doing.
Huh.
It was kind of interesting to hear him talk about that. But then, you know, it's like, ooh, in these corners, I know I can take him. But unfortunately, Matthew Johnson didn't quite have the edge with that car that he thought he'd have, getting used to the gravel. His first time, you know, in a few years racing at that high speed and rally. When he was doing the Snowdrift event, ACP, of course, went into a snowbank and ended up giving the advantage to Matthew Johnson. But,
we did see Matthew really seemed like he was struggling for grip in a lot of the tighter areas.
Actually, no, that's right. He said that in the interview. He said that he was used to, because he drove all-wheel drive before. Right. This is the first time doing the rally two-wheel drive stuff. So he was doing all-wheel drive before, and he was used to being able to just punch it. But with the two-wheel drive with the turbo, he's got to squeeze that throttle or he'll just lose grip. It'll just spin. And he was really having to teach himself that. Also getting used to the higher speed with the co-driver and all that stuff.
Yeah, and he was really also having a hard time trying to get the car to rotate, it seemed like. What we've dubbed the Rolla Triangle there at Ollie, at that hairpin, and down this was on stage 10, really, really tight hairpin. In both cases, it seemed like he was having a difficult time getting the car wowed up. And Whitesell, so you remember how just crazy out of shape he was, coming down the hill there at stage 13. In fact, he went out wide, around, you know, there's that pit, there that we've dubbed the Rolla Triangle, there at stage 13 at that hairpin. And if you're not going to make turn, you have to go out past it, closer to the runoff area and back. He could not get the car to rotate enough to make that corner. And we also noticed he went wide on stage 10 at the hairpin there. It just seemed like a grip problem all around. It wasn't just putting the power down on corner exit, but it was just he was having a really hard time getting the car to hook up.
Gotcha. You know, as much has been, you know, these are the two guys we're going to probably be watching throughout the championship, watching ACP versus Matthew Johnson. But what was really fascinating is to see this rental car by, what were those guys?
Hudson.
Not the Miller. Yes, Hudson. So, wow.
Yeah, with
talk
the
about
Team O'Neil
rental. They actually finished day one in the lead, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, unfortunately they didn't stay there, but, it was, I loved watching that car go by. You know, and I kept thinking of the, I think Whitesell, you were the first to mention this, that the Top Gear quote, that, the fastest car in the world is not a Ferrari. It is a rental.
And they indeed were pushing that to the extent.
Yeah.
When they threw it into the culvert there at stage 13.
Mr. Shaw, that's right. You had tweeted that to us.
Yes, that came from a there was an episode last year's Top Gear where they went to New Zealand, and it was where they had a rental car driving on the gravel roads of New Zealand, which are just epic, versus the Oracle Team USA, their catamaran that they use for the America's Cup. And so James May was on the America's Cup getting faces full of water and wind going around on the ocean, you know, and versus Jeremy Clarkson, who was in a rental car. And yeah, that was his quote or something like that. It was, yeah, the fastest car in the world is a rental car because you don't care.
Right.
Nice. Anyway. But yeah, those guys, Will Hudson, way to go to prove himself. And I was hearing that actually after this event, even though he ended up in the end, he ended up DNFing. He had an issue on the second day, so he wasn't able to finish the event, if I remember right. But he did so well out there that he's planning on doing the entire championship now. So that's kind of cool.
Right.
Indeed.
So we ended up having, of course, ACP end up taking the win on that one. Matthew Johnson ends up taking second. And then the Miller brothers, who did very well at, Snowdrift, ended up getting third on the podium for two wheel drive. So good on them. Championship is basically looking like, of course, Higgins in the lead, Ken Block in second, but you know, he's not going to be really competing for the whole championship. Van Way in third. So Van Way is leading the Super Production Championship by 2 points over Nick Roberts. Antoine Lestage in fifth. Yeoman in sixth. Pastrana in seventh. As we kind of go on down the line there, Sterix. And of course, it takes a little while to get down to the two wheel drive guys that are sitting overall, at least in 11th and 12th. But, you know, this is just the beginning of the season, but I think we got a lot of great competition to come in Rally America, and I just can't wait to see what they've got going on TV. I do want to ask one other thing, whether you guys saw it or not. I happened to see a clip that they were talking to a guy who's a paraplegic in rally racing.
He was at our – he stayed at our hotel.
Yeah.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is some of the awesomest things about this sport, you know, the fact that anybody can really get into it, right? As long as you have the safety features and all that stuff, you can adapt a car so you could – you're a freaking paraplegic and you can race.
And
that
race
is awesome.
Well.
Exactly. So that is an awesome, awesome story there. And I was hearing that the Rage Films guys that are covering it for NBC Sports did do a behind-the-scenes specifically with that team that put together that car that they're going to show a little bit of when we get the TV coverage. So that'll be cool to see that.
You know, this year they had a Mitsubishi, as opposed to last year they were running a BMW E36. And, you know, that Mitsubishi just handled so much better on the loose stuff. You know, getting the BMWs to rotate on the gravel is just a real, real challenge.
I guess I would have figured they'd rotate easier being rear-wheel drive.
No. They, you know, as you're coming in, it's hard to get it to rotate in a controlled way that isn't just going to swap ends on you.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, I guess that probably pretty much does it for our 100 Acre Wood coverage. Sorry that we took so long on it, but, you know, it's great to have guys that were there at the event and got to see all the happenings. And, you know, congratulations to all the fans that were there and the competitors that won both in the regional as well as the national championship. I love rally. It's just so cool. They really pour their heart out in keeping those cars going and whatnot. And I can't wait till the next event, which is, of course, here in Oregon. Yay! I've already got it blocked out on the calendar and the days off from work. So
I was about to say, you already said you're going to that, right? You're volunteering?
Yeah. Yes, I am going to be a volunteer again. So I might not have the best overall like coverage as far as I won't have media credentials or anything like that. But you know what? Being a marshal still usually gives you the best view. If you saw some of my pictures from last year, mm-hmm. I had this awesome backdrop with Mount Hood in the background as the cars went flying by in front of me. And I couldn't have been happier. It's like the greatest picnic of your life. You're hanging out in the sunshine, you know, cars flying by at, you know, 1,500 miles an hour.
Just jinxed it.
Yeah, it's going to rain. This year it's going to rain. There you go. But, you know, it's an awesome thing. And there's never a lack of there's never a lack of need for volunteers. So if a rally comes to your area, you know, try and help out. You actually get a really good view of the event. So, and behind the scenes access you might not otherwise get.
All right.
So, moving on into WRC news, there is just a little bit of news in there, a little excerpt. Sounds like Ford is going to give a little facelift to their little Fiestas. Not really much more than that. The homologation is rules have been suspended for the cars because Volkswagen is so far ahead already. And cost-wise, they wanted to keep the costs down. Obviously, since Ford isn't officially backing M Sport anymore, and you know, Citroën's had their financial difficulties during the financial crisis, and they're barely holding on, especially with Loeb gone now and going to WTCC. They've been trying to say it, you know, we're not going to do any more homologations other than limited stuff. So we're all familiar with the Focus ST and the Fiesta ST, big open gaping mouth front on the car. They're going to debut that finally in Rally Mexico. So nothing that big of a deal there. Really, that's kind of it for WRC news. There are a couple other little things I guess I could touch on. They've already announced for the Australian rally that they're going to have a new hub. They're moving that to a new location, some international stadium at Coffs. It's still going to be instead of the old Brailsford Park. No big deal there. We're going to have in Wales, they're going to have a new special offer with the British Rally Championship. They're actually going to, if you end up winning that event in a Ford, because Ford is the Ford Fiestas are real big backers of the British Rally Championship. If you end up winning that, you'll get a chance in an R5 at Wales Rally GB in the WRC 2 category. So that's kind of a big push there they're doing. I did hear one thing that Malcolm Wilson said, that if it wasn't for the success of their R5, they would not have actually been able to make it into the WRC for 2014.
Oh, wow. It just shows you how important the support of teams like Ford and Citroën are to their program with these customer cars and these lower championships.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that they were the first to have an R5 homologation out there, nobody else had theirs even ready. Not Citroën, not Peugeot, not anybody. Skoda, they're one and alone. And the number of people that have bought cars or leased them for events has been through the roof. They've been making money like you wouldn't believe on those R5s. And they really believe this might be that future homologation that we're going to see in 2016. Is it 2016? Yeah, 2016. Mm-hmm. We might be actually kind of downgrading to the R5 spec for the WRC.
Interesting. Well, to be continued.
Yes, to be continued. Next event for the WRC is, of course, Rally Mexico in Guanajuato, Mexico, March 6th through the 9th. Always a great event. Of course, it is the last of the specialty events because the cars are about 30% down on power because of the high altitude mixed with the heat. So it is a little bit of a challenge for the engines there. It'll be exciting to see how Hyundai can do without snow. they kind of had a rough couple of events kind of starting out. So we'll see how well they do in those conditions out there in Mexico.
All right. Well, we certainly look forward to that. As always, a great event is Rally Mexico. So do we have any other rally stuff, or is it time for a brief trip into the realm of Formula One?
I think we can talk trip in the realm of Formula One, so let's jump right in and do it as quickly as we can.
Yes,
hold on.
I agree. Hold on to yourselves.
Okay. Testing so far, we've had testing at Bahrain, testing at Jerez, and of the engines, Mercedes has 1,147 laps completed. Renault has 619 laps completed. Ferrari has 556. Ferrari is down on laps completed because Marussia has done 29 so far. And they only have three entries, Ferrari, Sauber, and Marussia. So that kind of bodes poorly for their engine in that they're not getting the testing mileage of the others. The Renault, which has been plagued, still has 619 laps of testing at this point. But the Mercedes, wow. I mean, it pretty much doubles the other two in testing miles so far.
And which ones have caught fire and which ones haven't?
Sorry. Did you say something disparaging about the Renault engine? So that's a concern, obviously, because the flagship team for Renault would indeed be Red Bull, and they have been having nothing but trouble. Obviously, testing so far has not gone their way, and we've already documented that very well. We should say that Nico Rosberg currently has the quickest time of these new engines at the testing at Bahrain last week, and his best time was about a second off of last year's pole time at Bahrain. So if you want to say that these engines are just going to be slow, they're not.
Okay.
If you can get up to pole time with these engines, it says something very important. That at the dawn of this era with these new engines, they're already approaching some of the quick times from the races. That means that mid-season, they're not going to have any trouble keeping up that pace.
Oh no! I mean, we're talking
about those top times.
Oh no, we're talking about cars now that are nowhere near what we're even going to see at Australia.
Indeed,
and I mean that means to say that they're not really developed, not really set up, just kind of running the reliability checks, trying to set some quick times. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's pretty impressive. They might not sound the best. They might be that high pitch wee that you're always used to hearing. But at the end of the day, boys, I mean, we're still going to be talking about a fast motor racing, and it's being done with technology that will make most shudder at the fact that it is not V12 or turbocharged.
You know, it is turbocharged. But you know what? That kind of just reminds me of back, you know, when everybody was saying that, you know, Rally is dead since Group B died. And the thing is the same exact stage run on today's WRC cars is completed faster by the modern cars in Group B. Regardless of the sound and the 550 horsepower that they had, the new cars are overall quicker. So it isn't all about horsepower numbers, people.
That's true. So
I will play the Clarkson role and say
more power.
Yes, it is.
More power. Well, anyway, testing will resume in Bahrain on Thursday, and Thursday through Sunday will be the wrap up of preseason testing before we go to Melbourne. Should be noted, just like Sean said, that these cars are going to be developed all season. Well, Ferrari's already telegraphing that they're bringing all kinds of new bits for the car for testing at Bahrain, and they won't be the only ones. Obviously, this is just a puff piece about Ferrari, but everybody is going to have new bits. Adrian Newey's probably going to bring an entire hauler full of new bits to try and see what doesn't light on fire. So, yeah, no big surprise on that, no big shock on that. It's just how this game is played. I would look to see the front wings look a little bit different, especially those funky noses. I doubt that what we've seen on the cars are the final solutions.
Sure.
So it'll be fun to see what they show up at testing with, and then further what they might even revise it to look like going to the to Melbourne. the only other bit of information we do need to talk about was Bernie Ecclestone won a high court battle in London against the Constantine Median Group, who were suing him, basically saying that his colluded sale of F1 to CVC prevented them from buying it, so therefore you owe us money. Mm-hmm. The judge threw it out because he basically didn't find any grounds to state that this thing kept them from gaining this money that they were trying to gain as damages. However, the judge didn't do Mr. Ecclestone any favors. And these are direct quotes from the judgment. The payments were a bribe. They were made because Mr. Ecclestone had entered into a corrupt agreement with Dr. Jabrowski in May 2005, under which Jabrowski was to be rewarded for facilitating the sale of the bank's shares in the Formula One group to a buyer acceptable to Mr. Ecclestone. No loss to Constantine Media has been shown to have been caused by the corrupt arrangement with Dr. Jabrowski. However, it's impossible to regard Mr. Ecclestone as a reliable or truthful witness.
Oof. Oh, so
you,
they
sir,
watched
are an idiot. Right? They're like, you know what? We would have said something different if it would have been for this stupid double points race, but nope. Nope. You, sir, cannot be trusted.
Wow. I mean, this is a summary this is a summary judgment dismissing the case. However, this Judge Newey, he goes just both barrels. Mr. Ecclestone entered into a corrupt agreement. He paid a bribe. He rewarded him for facilitating the sales of this bank to an acceptable buyer to Mr. Ecclestone. Clearly, they think something bad happened here. So, yeah, this was thrown out of court. And the one in the United States was thrown out of court because they said that the U.S. court didn't have it wasn't where all the events took place. It needed to be tried in Germany or in the U.K.
Right. Mm-hmm. Jurisdiction issues. Yeah.
So what fun. Bernie has this trial coming up in April, and especially with statements being made like this by the UK judge.
Yeah, not good. I mean, they can read between the lines for sure. So,
I mean, are we really surprised?
No, we shouldn't be.
No. But getting away from the bad news in Formula One, the Melbourne Grand Prix.
So close.
We're talking. It's March 16th. That's 2.5 weeks away. We are almost there. So anyone going to stay up till 4 a.m. to watch that one?
Yep.
I'll be in Target.
I don't know. Stay up? Get up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that the same? Go. That's the – well, ooh, that's the
– Actually, I can stay up for that one because I'm a few hours away from you guys, so –
Well, I was just realizing that that's going to span right during the same time as Sebring.
Yeah.
And so old dad here may be doing a little channel flipping back and forth.
Really?
Yeah.
DVR, baby. DVR.
No, I'm really anxious to see how the LMP2s do against the DPs this time.
I would agree with you.
I think
testing was promising.
Yeah. And so this could turn out pretty interesting. And so yeah, I'm definitely going to be flipping back and forth between them.
Cool. All right. Well, is that all we have, boys?
That is it.
Oh wow. Well, I'd like to thank everybody, obviously, for a fantastic night listening to us go on about 100 Acre Woods. It's important to realize that even though we do cover a lot of the IndyCar, and the 500 is our kind of crown jewel at the site, 100 Acre Wood is the official home event of the
it's
site.
Our home rally.
Yeah, so it's a big event for us.
Your home rally, not mine. Yeah.
Well, it is the website, de facto website home rally.
Mid-Ohio is the home race of this.
No. So, anyways, as we all lay claim to what is home and what is not, I will say again, thanks so much, though, for listening this week. We will be back next week, same time, same channel. I'm sure to talk about John Barnes suing the pants off of everybody in IndyCar. but until then, thanks so much. Have a great week, and gentlemen, say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Good night.
Oh, my God.